Blog Talk Radio.
And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, they be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Mind, body, and soul, is you living? We all under attack,
is you different?
I know niggas existing in two prisons, feeling they through living like death is too tempting. What's a day worth? Put a price on it. He was 17, the judge dropped life on him. He ain't live yet, now he in the tight corner.
Gangs got their sights on him,
on the yard with a knife on him. Family trying to tell him to chill, we gon' get you home. He like, how my appeals dead, they took the wrong. That's kinda cold when you think about it. He shot a nigga, he ain't think about it, didn't even blink about it. But he was trapped in the hood and couldn't think about it, really trying to be about it. Never left his public housing, which resembles the dormitories he's trapped in. So who knew that they was prepping him back then? Yeah, on how to live packed in, make him hate his black skin. I swear it's all facts, man.
Yeah, I swear to God it's all facts, man.
So you should let the track spin. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Remember calling my mom to tell my sentence. Since I don't do no snitching, I'm not a witness. They gave me 23 years, ma,
I'm finished.
I think she cried for like 15 minutes. Over the years, there's enough tears to fill a lake. A lot of trips on
interstates for visiting.
Remember Tony got stabbed,
yo, may he rest in peace.
Stressed my mother so bad, she barely slept for weeks. Thankful that it wasn't me, knowing prison dangers. Doing time with lifers and killers and gangbangers. Some of us get caught in the matrix, but can you blame us? Trapped in cages like animals trying to tame us. Parole hearings are jokes, you go a 50 times. Same excuse every time, serious nature
of the crime.
I can't change the crimes that I committed, but I can change my mind and I repent. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, they be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though.
Bismillah, alhamdulillah, salat wa salamu ala rasulullah mubad. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Islam, peace to you all. Welcome tonight. Here we are, January the 1st. That's right for many of you celebrating this day as New Year's. We are here for our very first broadcast in the year of 2023. That's right, Point of Impact. And sadly, but graciously, you know, we're going to be without the Queen Mother, Krista. She's out enjoying herself in Jamaica. So we're going to be without her tonight. And inshallah, we're going to, you know, have a formal, beautiful night. And I hope everybody enjoys it. And just take the time to absorb the beautiful conversation that we're going to have tonight with some wonderful, wonderful people. By the grace of Allah, of course, you know me, myself, Mr. Derek Hansford, a.k.a. Minhaj, a.k.a. Malaj, here with us, and my brother Hassan. Hassan? Hassan? Are you there, Hassan? Okay, he'll be with us in a second. He'll be on in a second. Hassan, can you hear me, bro? Okay. Well, he'll be on in a second. We have some beautiful, and in place of Krista tonight, we're supposed to have
our
beautiful sister. Yeah, I can hear you now. I was wondering where you're at. Okay. I didn't know you're there.
A little technical difficulty. I'm here, though.
Okay. And in place of Krista tonight, Miss Krista Ellison, we have, of course, my beautiful sister, Miss Dr. Tamara Pilgrim, the founder of, you know, Tomorrow's Change, and also business owner of Osric Ingredients, along with her beautiful husband, my brother-in-law, Rick Osric. And but now, let me just tell you, we got some beautiful, beautiful people coming on today, and we're here to talk and discuss about the importance of mental health professionals in the Muslim community, in the black community, who can address the mental health issues of the black community through their own experience. So we have Nikki, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Okay, she has a yes, yeah. Say hello. You want to say hello to everybody?
Oh, hello. I didn't realize I was on, so my apologies if you heard extra stuff in the background. Good evening, everyone.
Well, we know this is your first time hosting a podcast. We go our podcast
don't
host
like that.
Yeah. Well, but we have a beautiful, beautiful person, a beautiful lady, a beautiful mother, a beautiful neighbor. And her name is Miss Dr. Vanessa Barnes Bay. And I know her as Amala, and she's a beautiful mental health specialist who has a lot of platforms that you can reach out to, which we'll talk to tonight. And then we also have the wonderful brother who's with us, who's a licensed mental health specialist, and his name is Wasa Wahid. Shabazz Allah, and we also have another beautiful brother who will be joining us tonight, Mr. Sean, what is Sean's last name? What is the brother's last name? Mr. Sean, Sean Stewart, I'm sorry, excuse me, Mr. Sean Stewart will be joining us tonight. So, we have a host of people here to discuss a very serious matter that is going on in the black community, which has gone on for over 400 years without being addressed. And that, I believe, is one of the great problems of why we as a community can't come together, because we're still suffering from a great deal of pain and mental health issues that just haven't been dealt with. So we're going to kick off the show tonight. Do we have our guest with us? Sister Amala, are you with us?
Islam, yes, I'm here. Amala, is that what you're saying?
Amala, I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me, Sister Amala. Okay. Brother Wahid, are you here with us, Brother Wahid?
Yes, sir. President of County Board.
Okay, and Brother Sean, are you here, sir?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay, so we're gonna kick it off right now, and I'm gonna let the beautiful guest co-host today lead off with the topic of conversation of why it is so important for us to have mental health specialists in the black community. Nikki, you want to address the first question to our guest?
Well, I guess the first thing we should do is get to know who we're speaking to. If so, each of you can please just give us a brief introduction. Tell us what you do and how you are affiliated with mental health in the black community.
Well, we'll start with Sister Amala. Sister Amala?
Yes, I'm here. How are you? Can you all hear
all right,
me?
Now, how you doing?
I'm doing well. So let me just thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of your platform, your community, your village of workers out here doing the work in the Asiatic community. My name is Vanessa Barnes Bay. I go by Amala. I've been a social worker for over 17 years. I've practiced social work in the state of New Jersey. I'm currently here in the Florida area. I recently graduated with my PhD in human services in clinical social work in 2020. I am the founder of You Talk, You Heal, which is a virtual community that focuses on talking and healing, giving us an opportunity to share our stories, share our truth without bias, without judgment. One of the things that I found in my scope of work is that talking is the conduit for healing amongst all of us. We have a history of keeping things in the closet, skeletons, and don't talk about it, so we keep things bottled up. And when it comes to mental health, definitely talking through it is one of the first steps. And I came to this platform by way of our good brother. I'm just honored, and I look forward to learning and growing with you all and sharing any resources that I may have moving forward. So I'll turn it over to the next speaker. Again, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, beloved. Thank you so much. Another mother queen, y'all. We got these mother queens on the phone today. Y'all better respect them.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, because they got plenty to tell us, y'all. They got that wisdom, you know. And Brother Wahid, Brother Wahid, you want to tell the people who you are, what platforms you run and what you're doing out here?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Peace. First name, Warsaw. Wahid Shabazz Allah. And I am currently a LMHPR, which is a licensed mental health professional in residency in the state of Virginia. I'm currently on the LPC track, which means once I'm fully licensed, I'll be a licensed professional counselor. I'm also a certified anger management. I'm also a certified anger management specialist, registered with NAMA. My background includes probably over 27 years of experience in the helping profession as far as community outreach and mentoring. But as far as mental health clinically, I've been involved the last 5 years working crisis stabilization, mental health skill building, therapeutic day treatment, group homes, assessments, outpatient. And that's pretty much my scope of competency. I've done, once again, a lot of community outreach, going into the prisons and speaking to individuals, running a youth organization. The name of my organization is Affirm Foundation Incorporated, and I also contract with several other mental health agencies in the 757 area code as well as 804.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, we got some busy people here. And man, we got some stuff to put down today. Boy, y'all better stop playing. I'm telling you, if you're listeners, please call in to 563-999-3718. That's 563-999-3718. Call in and please press 1 if you would like to speak. We will have a brief moment for you to speak and maybe ask any important questions or any comments of positivity that you would like to insert into our conversation tonight. Brother Sean, are you with us, sir? You want to introduce yourself to the people?
All right. Yeah, my name is Sean Ford. I'm currently living in the Virginia Beach area. I don't have the credentials as Brother Shabazz, but I am the owner of Ezekiel's Wheel of Higher Intelligence, which is a clothing line that I started maybe almost going on 2 years now. And I'm the one that's up here today as a guest advocating for my brother Anthony Stewart, who is currently incarcerated at the Greenville Correctional Center in Jared, Virginia, who was wrongly convicted. So I'm up here tonight with the segment, you know, dealing with these brothers on the segment about mental health.
Okay. That's what's up. That's what's
great.
Up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're going, like I said, Nick, tomorrow, you want to kick out the first question and get this topic rolling? Before we even get going, Nikki, tomorrow, you want to just, in case some listeners may not be familiar with who you are, though you've been on the show quite frequently, you want to tell the people just, your qualifications and your credentials?
Yes, I am. My name is Tomorrow. You'll hear Malai call me Tomorrow, and Nikki, he does it interchangeably. I'm the same person. I have a nonprofit organization called Tomorrow's Change, where we provide behavioral and mental health services to youth and families. My credentials. I've been in the field for over 20 years. I am an LMSW. I have a certification in human services. Yeah, my husband is in the background saying double masters and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, I've been in it for a while now, and I have a few credentials. I have a great love for assisting people of African descent, particularly our youth, and that's become a greater passion for me over the past 3 to 5 years. I'm excited about this conversation because I want to hear all of the things that, you know, you guys, our guests, are doing, and, you know, find out if there's anything that we can do together and how, you know, from your expertise, your experiences, you know, sharing with everyone what we all can do in order to make a difference, especially in our communities. So my first question would be, I guess just that, what is it that, based off of what you're doing right now, that you can share with us as a people that we should be able to chime in on and do even without having the same skills and expertise as you guys?
Sister Marlo, you want to answer that first, sister?
Agreeing. Could you say your question again, please, for me?
If I'm talking to the audience, what is it that, based off of what you do and what you are familiar with in your field, if you are talking to the audience who do not have the same degrees and specialties as you, what is it that they would be able to chime in on and assist with regard to helping people in our community with mental health?
All right. So let me start off by one saying that oftentimes in the Black community, mental health issues go unnoticed. And it's simply because that we are not in tune with ourselves, first and foremost, let alone with someone else. So it's a lot of times that brothers and sisters are going through issues, you know, such as depression, bipolar disorder, you know, just a post-traumatic stress. We don't know what that mm-hmm. looks like because we haven't really been trained and educated, and we've been really taught to kind of just deal with anything, right? We don't really know what to do. We don't really know what it looks like. Right. So for the people in the audience, I really think that it's important for us to start to align ourselves with things like this podcast, you know, things like You Talk, You Heal, talking to the experts, right, getting educated on what is going on within yourself and what could be going on in the lives of others around you. Depression is one of those things that you oftentimes can't tell what's going on because many of us walk around with masks, right? We're saying we're okay when we're really not.
Yes.
Because we're taught to be so super resilient and so super strong that we're not in touch with our feelings, emotions, and the things that we go through. Maybe when we were younger, we were taught, you know, suck it up, you know, stop crying, get over it, right? When we were kind of way young. So I just think just to kind of start the topic off is to get educated. We have now access to the World Wide Web, so we can go on and look at certain things so we can understand what's going on inside of ourselves. So workshops, podcasts, I mean, for myself personally, with You Talk, You Heal, I do take the time out to come on platforms like this and speak to people so we can understand the signs. We can know what maybe another person is going through, and then we can offer some very basic coping strategies in order to deal with that. But most oftentimes, we're not really educated on what mental health is or what it looks like, and then we also kind of turn our nose up at it when we do find out that a family member or somebody that we love is going through something. And so, again, we're just really not equipped and not prepared. So I'm excited that now at the start of 2023, we can start really having a conversation, because that's most mm-hmm. important. I hope I was able to answer your question.
Yes,
sure.
Thank you.
Hassan, you want to chime in? You want to say something real quick, Hassan? Hassan? Okay.
I might have lost.
Hold on one second. Yeah, can y'all hear me now?
There he is. Yes, we can hear you.
Can y'all hear me now?
We can hear you.
Yes, brother.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But what I wanted to say is that when it comes down to mental health, especially within the black community, we're talking about a subject that has been basically become taboo, right? It's such a negative stigma placed upon mental health that we don't even want to acknowledge that those things exist, not just for ourselves, you know, for our entire community when we look at the atrocities and the other things that we see being displayed and committed in our community. A lot of times and most of the time, it's always connected with some element of mental health that has gone unchecked. And largely, you know, as a society, we have to look at the entire mental health of the society. Really look at every aspect of what it is that we condone within this society, and then you wonder why people have lost their minds, right? And we're not just talking about the individuals who have been clinically diagnosed as having mental health issues. We're talking about largely many of the people who are dealing with depression, who are dealing with anxiety, who are dealing with just the inability to be able to cope with day-to-day living. A lot of that and every aspect of it has to do with mental health, and it's something that we strive to make the crazy things normal and fair seeming, right?
Yeah.
So that to the point where when we participate in them, we don't see it as crazy no more, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we really have to analyze the psychosocial profile of the entire society that we live in, right? And look at how we deal with one another, and then look at the effect that it proceeds to have upon our community.
Good luck, Brother Wahid, could you chime in on that, brother, for us?
Yes, a couple of things I want to chime in on. As the sister said, and this is important to emphasize, is that under the guise, and I'm calling it a guise, under the guise of resilience, is when we often burn out and break down, feeling like we have to be strong. And within the black community, we have this erroneous, fallible type of approach that because our ancestors overcame slavery, that we're just this strong, automatically strong, resilient people. Like, to mention anything
right
about mental troubles is a sign of weakness, when it's just the opposite. It's when you know you need help and you ask for help, that's the sign of strength. That's the sign of resilience. Not trying to just shoulder it all alone and say, well, toughen up, man up, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You know, these type of things that we are taught to deal with when we don't have the coping skills to deal with it. So I agree
that's
with your
right
sister on that aspect of resilience. That can set us up for failure within itself. I will also say, and I can't remember who said it, but they said it's no measure of wellness to be adjusted to a sick society. And that's what Brother Hassan was just speaking on, that we're going along to get along, and we're doing things the way society is doing it, where so much has been, that the abnormal is being made normal, and the unnatural
right
is being made natural. And so these are the things that we're dealing with because this system was not designed to really help us in our specific and unique situations.
Yes,
so
yes,
let me say this real quick. Mental illness or mental health conditions do not discriminate, just like substance abuse and addiction. We understand that it does not discriminate about race, socioeconomic status, or anything. However, black people are disproportionately more adversely affected than any other race, nationality, ethnicity, or demographic. And that's why we put emphasis on the black population. We're the ones that's underserved and underrepresented.
That's right. Brother Sean, would you want to speak to this topic?
I see it firsthand because I'm dealing with a brother who's incarcerated currently at the Greenville Correctional Center, as I said before. This kind of predates any legal issues with my brother, but my brother, when he was very young, I say age 14, between the age of 14 and 16, had a traumatic brain injury. Now, Mind you, before any of this, as I said, it predates any legal issues, my brother already had learning disabilities. You know, so before the accident, my brother already had learning disabilities. He was in special ed classes, etc. But what I saw post the accident was not only the deterioration of his mindset and the way that, you know, he thought and acted, but once you combine that mind state with a chemical substance such as cocaine or marijuana or other illegal drugs, we know marijuana's been legalized since, but at that time period it just took on a whole other persona as a person. So right. with his defects, he didn't, you know, his situation is different because as I said, he predates any of this legal stuff that's going on now, but his mindset was already like that prior, you know, to catching these charges. And when he got drugs involved and he started deteriorating, he's not like a normal person that actually think, well, you know, I have some issues going on. I need to go talk to, you know, maybe a psychiatrist or get, you know, some substance abuse counseling. It just took him to another level. And then, you know, at the point where he started deteriorating and, you know, at the time, you got to think, everybody, you know, when you in life, everybody got to live their own life. So the things that we may recognize later on down the road, when we in a certain condition and state of mind ourselves, like an individual that's going through that same condition, we might not see it. But like you said, once you get yourself right and you can step out and look inside at another individual in their condition and you've been in that condition, then you can start looking at the situation differently because now you can analyze, there's something wrong with this man, or he's going through some mental, you know, mental episodes or whatever he's going through at the time. As I said, I'm not a specialist in this field. I'm just looking at my brother's case because I'm advocating for him. But through me advocating for him, now I'm getting a clearer picture because, you know, I grew up with brothers like Brother Warsaw, you know, and other brothers who now, you know, this is their field of expertise. So having conversations with these brothers has given me a better understanding of the mental health issue with black people and the mental health issue as a whole dealing with society.
Right. Alhamdulillah. And you know it's what I hear in layman terms. What I hear is what I often tell people in my field of specialties of you know, recovery, drug recovery. You know, I try to, you know, focus, get my clients and the people I serve to focus on the primary issues in their lives and understanding that, you know, seeking relief from these issues starts with first seeking knowledge of what is the issue. You know, reverting back to the actual problem instead of trying to escape the problem, you know what I mean, and seeking relief in a way that does not resolve the problem, it just compounds the problem. So I want to ask right now, Sister Mala, like, why is it so important for us to have black professionals in the black community? Can you speak to that?
Mm-hmm. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
So it's important to have professionals in the misnomer black community or Asiatic, whatever name we're using to label us these days, but I understand. It's just simply because we have a high rate of trauma. We have a high rate of violence within our homes, within our communities that impacts the majority of not just our young people, but elderly people as well, emotionally, you know, and mentally. There is a long history of dehumanization, oppression, and violence, right, against, you know, our population of people. So it's really important for us to see each other in these spaces. Oftentimes, you'll see in the past where we'll have these European counterparts striving to come in, right, and address our mental health issues. But how can you address individuals if you don't understand and understand their makeup and what they're about, not just what's written in the textbook, but being able to be involved, to be able to go sit with people and understand their dynamics. So we don't need every other race coming to us, trying to help and assist us when we just need more brothers and sisters to go get your licensed professional counseling degree, your master's degree. It is so vitally important because we have a shortage of us in this space. And it's really just because of just that history of, again, you got, you know, European people telling us what to do, guiding every step. You got Chinese people coming in telling us what to do. You got every other race coming in to address mental health for us and not us. And I'm like, I think it's something like boo-boo, for us, by us. We need more of that in the mental health professional. I want to see my brothers and sisters. I would feel quite confident if I had to go to therapy or go to someone where I could see, like some of you brothers and sisters on this call, be experts in this area and be able to give me advice, coping strategies, et cetera. So that's one of the reasons why it's important. We need to see us in this space, and who better than us to tell us about what we're going through and how better to resolve that matter. I think back then, let me say this, my grandmother transitioned many years ago, but I didn't know about a therapist. You went to grandma. You know, you went to great-grandma. You had an issue or a problem going on. And so I just think we need to really keep that pillar of our lineage, of our ancestral heritage in place by more of us showing up in this space as mental health specialists. Very, very key in 2023.
Wow, that was, you know, I absolutely agree, and I don't think many people can argue against that. Who can better know you than the people who have experienced and actually lived through what you're living through? So, you know, that is so key and valuable to what you said. Nikki, you want to touch on that? Can you touch on that? Because you talked a lot about.
I totally agree. I totally agree. As I'm listening, I'm nodding my head and I'm going, I totally agree. And that's one of the reasons why the first question I asked was how people who do not have the degrees and the licenses can help, because I am aware of the shortage of mental health professionals who are of color. And one of the things that I've learned just through speaking to different people here in Delaware, the struggle is real. It's not an easy feat for people to be able to get those degrees. So we're going to probably be in this situation for a while. So in the meantime, you know, it's important for us as the professionals with the degrees and the licenses and so on to be able to bring awareness to the communities, to talk to our families, talk to our parents. I love what the sister said about, you know, our lineage, you know, our ancestors. You know, there was a time when that was who we all went to for direction. And it's unfortunate, you know, we've lost that, you know, that we don't have that as our foundation any longer. So how do we bring that back? You know, how do we make sure that, yes, we are, you know, professionals who are meeting people and getting clients, and, you know, we're reaching the people who come to us. How do we reach the people who can't get to us? You know, and that's one of the things that's extremely important to me at this point.
Well, one of the things that I experienced from my personal experience as an African American man coming home from prison, you know, even though I'm a treatment specialist, I found it very difficult for me to get credentials to move forward in the field of healing people. Brother Wahi, can you talk to maybe brothers and sisters who are meeting these kind of barriers? You know, and can you talk to the struggle of brothers and sisters you know, breaking these obstacles and breaking through these obstacles?
Yes, sir, without a doubt. From firsthand experience, yes. Before I jump into that, let me just comment on something about being able to go to grandma and great-grandma. This is the thing with mental health counseling. Mental health counseling is not designed to replace what we've always had as a backbone for a lot of people with the black church, right? A lot of people with grandma. So when we assess clients that are coming into services, a couple of questions that are on most assessments are, who are your natural supports?
The supporters.
Natural supports are friends and family members you could depend on, right?
Right.
So we're not putting the cape on and thinking that just coming to sessions is going to save everyone. We're connecting them through natural support. Who can you depend on? My mother, my brother, my aunt, you know, my coach, you know, my pastor, right? My rabbi, my minister, right? So mental health sessions are not here to replace anything or anyone that was our backbone. All right, so yeah. Let's continue to commit to natural support and social support. Who do I have in my community? Mm. Like in the Richmond area, RBHA, you know, Daily Planning, Commonwealth Catholic Charity. You know, all of them, connect them to natural and social support because we cannot do it all. This is a system approach, okay? Also, now, about the barrier crime, and I want to say this too. For some reason, in the substance abuse field more than in the mental health field, they're making it easier because they are truly advocating for themselves when it comes to substance abuse and addiction, right? They're making it easier for people to get specialist credentials, like peer support specialists, right, where you don't necessarily have to have your CSAC. You don't have to be an LPC or LCSW. Based on your experiences of being a recovering alcoholic or addict, knowing that you lived it and were able to get clean and sober, that's qualifications within itself. So we need to push for that more in the mental health field like they're doing in the substance abuse field, to where you don't have to go through 4 years of school and then go on to get a master's and a doctorate. Your experience alone. A lot of people don't need degrees. T.D. Jakes, Joel Osteen, Joyce Myers, all of these people, Louis Farrakhan, they don't have no degrees, but they're still able to reach people and inspire people. So it's ways to do it. But what I propose, black people come together and get our own credentialing type of service where we can reach out to people that we know are qualified to help other people, but it might not be necessarily the way that the university is doing. Now, let me say this about barrier crime. Barrier crime. I rerouted my whole academic journey because I was told I was not going to be able to get licensed because of being a convicted felon. Mind you, that the barrier crime that pops up on my record is a nonviolent barrier crime from 31 years ago. 31 years ago, it was a burglary charge, non-residential burglary charge, and they stopped me from saying, well, you can't work in direct care with mental health. You can't work with the vulnerable population. So I'm coming from the vulnerable population, and I'm prepared and qualified to do so academically, right, and through rehabilitation and reform, basically turning my life around. Who better than me and others like me to work with our peers that are struggling without judgment? Non-judgmental positive regard is what they push in mental health. We're not to judge our clients. Who better than the people who've been through this to serve our people, right? So the barrier crime law is what we're going to need to go up against. And I talked to someone, I'm not going to mention the name right now, but they let me know, they said, listen, Virginia is an unforgiving state. They don't really care what you've done to improve yourself. They're not really trying to hear it. She said, I'm not trying to tell you not to fight, but you got a hell of a fight on your hands. But I'm going to tell you, I've been fighting. I've been screened by the DBHDS, Department of Behavioral Health, Science and Development Service, whatever. And I was deemed eligible to work in this field, right? But that was because legislation changed that allowed them to screen you and say, okay. And they went through everything like with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, I felt like I was really in judgment day. They asked me everything. But at the end of the day, it was so rewarding because they said yes. And that lady empowered me. She didn't judge me, and she wished me the best of, quote-unquote, luck. And so now I can work in this field. So we need to advocate for one another. We need to mentor one another. We need to show people how to overcome these barriers. And then we're going to have to go to the General Assembly and fight. This is the way a lot of people talk about vote, vote, vote. Your ancestors died for the right to vote. What's the point of voting and then going back home and sitting down? Are you holding the elected officials accountable for what they campaign on? Are you following up by going to city council? Are you going to the General Assembly? Are you lobbying? What are you doing besides just dropping a vote for a candidate that had the sweetest song at the time? So these are the things we need to do. We need to come together, like on these podcasts, We need to get together and go to the General Assembly and show force and unity and show that we're civilized, we're prepared, and we're qualified. But if anybody wants to reach me, I don't do social media too much. But my email is shabazz@afirmone.com. That's AFIRM and the number one, shabazz@afirmone.com. If we, you know, want to talk about moving forward with advocacy, getting other people credentialed as peer support specialists, we can move in that direction.
Okay. 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 And thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Right now, we're going to take a moment. Yeah. Jay Shaw, do we have any callers calling in? Do we have any? Anybody would like to speak, Jay Shaw?
One second. 1173 live.
Hello? Yes.
How you doing?
Good evening. All right. It's a pleasure to have you on, man.
This is Miles from last week. Remember, I spoke to you last week.
Okay. Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm fine. I've listened to you guys from the beginning to now. I noticed there's three things I haven't heard any of them spoke on. One is that, you know, how we talk about mental health. Now, we have these women who are pregnant, be getting high while they're pregnant. That affects the baby. Not only that, they're not getting free medical care, that, you know, neighbor care and all that stuff they need to help them have a good, healthy baby. Not only that, you know how when our kids is like 2-3 years old running around the house, they fall, hit their head, they got a bump on their head. We don't take them to get them checked. We say, okay, you'll be all right, rub it. But we know a white person, if their kid, they bump their head, they in emergency room. But we are rubbing sickness, you'll be all right. And another thing about the brothers, these brothers be out here, be high off all these drugs, getting these women pregnant. And that affects the kids, too. Because that drug is in their system, it gets into their sperm, and then boom. And that's another thing we got to stop doing, too. You know, especially when, like, if we out here going to be sleeping with these women, if we ain't wearing protection, we got to realize that we smoking anything, crack, LSD and all that, and we get these women pregnant, them babies are going to be affected by this. That's more damage we doing to our own people.
Right.
But I haven't heard anything.
I'm gonna let Sister Amala address that issue. I want people to understand something. You know, when we say women and we say brothers, this is why we're talking about the ills of mental illness, because only people who are mentally ill would do things to destroy themselves. You understand what I'm saying? And this is why we're having this discussion. So I'm gonna let Sister Amala. Sister Amala, you want to chime in on that?
Yes, I would. Thank you so much for letting me come back up to speak. The brother that just was speaking about substance abuse and women having issues with the babies. What was your name again, brother?
Miles.
Brother Miles.
Miles. All right. So, you know, I know that we're just kind of getting started with the call, and I know there's so many layers to mental health, and I don't know which way the call was going to go, but since you brought it up, as far as, you know, when it comes to mental health issues with the woman, I am a certified doula. I've done work over the past maybe 7 years working with women. It's one of my passions that I love to do outside of social work, as far as that's my career. But it's so important to work with the mother and the father at the entry level of bringing forth a new life, because that's where it all starts, right? How we take care of ourselves, what we pour into ourselves is the outcome of what we have within our children. So with that being said, right, when you start talking about the mother being on some sort of drug, well, again, in talking about mental health, right, you're talking about anything that affects the mood, the mind, conditions, your thinking, your behavior. That really goes back to, believe it or not, what we eat, our environment, right? Vaccinations, all types of injections, chemicals that we're taking in, yes, at the start of giving birth. You know, I'm a mother of five children, all who have never been vaccinated. They're all on a pretty much vegetarian diet. And so when you look at my children and you look at other children, they've never been to the doctors for any sick visits. Why? Because they have not been injected with so many different foreign substances to what alter their mood, thinking, and or behavior. And so in order for that child to be reared and you know, kind of engulfed the right way, her mama has to be, you know, intact. Daddy has to be intact. Again, this is why mental health in the so-called black community is so important, because we really are not living our lives the way we should be. We're doing everything animalistic, from the food to the music to the TV. And so all these different things play effect, right, on our well-being, because that's what we're really talking about. Well-being. You know, I don't know if it's Elijah Muhammad or Minister Farrakhan. They talk about how to eat to live, right? That plays a part. A lot of the stuff that we take in, brother and sister, is filled with so many chemicals that, i.e., you will see people have, like, young people with ADD, ADHD. Why? That is genetically modified foods and content that starts off very early, you know? And so I think that when we talk about mental health, and we talk about the mother and the father, yes, it goes back to we getting educated. We have to unlearn and relearn some stuff that we have been forced down our throats for eons and eons and eons, telling us who we are, who we're not, and we have to get in tune with ourselves. How do you do that? You have to go to the roots. You have to get around people that look like you, that sound like you, eat like you, that think like you. Right? That's how it begins.
We
have to be village again. We are not in tune with ourselves. We're not in tune with each other. If you look around, I mean, we can't see each other right now, but we probably don't look like how our ancestors look. We don't eat how they eat. We have gravitated to a lifestyle that is slowly but surely killing us by the minute, by the second. And so how does that show up for a mother who is doing drugs or taking in drugs with her baby? Well, guess what? A lot of that is through intentional acts, right? You know, what is it called? I'm trying to think real quick. Hold tight. Gentrification is one. Come into the communities, put all people to the left over here, take away the resources, redline us so we can't get what we need, put the worst food, you know, in our communities. And so all of that is by design. So the brothers and sisters that's on this call, who have the degrees, who have the certifications, I'm all about each one, reach one, teach one. So whatever you have, let's leverage and let's capitalize with each other and not have this me, me, my mentality that is just for me or just for my little group. We have to bring that unity back. We have to really dive in and say that in order for us to level up, we need to reach out and pull somebody out of that dark space that they're in. We just can't talk about it like right now.
Right.
Hold tight one second, beloved. And I'm going to bring it full circle. Because, again, this conversation can go into layers. All I'm saying is that the degrees and everything is all well and good, but we have to do the work. Yes. How do we do that work? I learned early on, being a part of the Nation of Gods and Earth, we go out into the streets. We go out into the community. When you see something, you don't turn around and say, I'm a mom, my business. That is your business. So you have to get out there and you have to hold somebody's hand. You have to get out there and say, this is my duty. This is my purpose. I will not turn a blind eye. And so that part is so key, because we are humanitarians. We don't need the degrees. Listen, brothers and sisters, this is in our DNA to do what we do, to help each other, to lift each other. While the degrees are great, don't get me wrong, I'm credentialed up. I don't know anybody more credentialed than me. I still got to get more, but the work that I do is in my heart. I was raised by women, matriarchs, fathers, that we got out there and we helped one another. And so that's where it is. You know, it begins at home. And so, young brother, when you talk about the women, I'm sure in your community, those women probably need you to come in and do more, say more, reach out and say, that is my business. Just because that's your wife, go out and grab her hand. No, I was just giving an example just to say how we just overall have to do more. I'm not saying specifically that this is a matter at hand, but you talked about drugs in the system, men, you know, impregnating these women. Again, all of those are very important, but on a big scale, we really have to get out there and mind our business, which is our people, which is every Asiatic brother and sister on the face of this planet Earth. They are your business. So we just have to do more.
Now, I understand that, but
Hold on, Miles. We got another caller, okay? We got another caller. Maybe 20 minutes.
No problem.
Okay, and I thank you, brother. I thank you for calling in, please continue to listen, because we're gonna introduce you to something that we're gonna be doing very, very much with this mental health. So we will have greater topics and platform for.
All right,
brother, and that was an excellent.
And
question.
Thank you, sister.
And
that was perfect. That was good.
Yes, Sister Amala, thank you
so much.
Jason, we got another caller.
5980, you live.
Hello, peace. Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening, peace. Yes.
Hello?
Can you speak? Yes.
Hey,
can
you
introduce
you
yourself?
Yes, my name is Gina Way. I'm a probation officer from the Department of Corrections, and I work at this program called Cold Spring Sea Cabin. It's on an alternative program, and we deal with a lot of substance abuse and mental health. Most of them have a, you know, dual diagnosis, but I just wanted to comment on, like, when the sister said about, you know, the importance of having people that look like me and you in the community, to be that layperson. Like, we could also get jobs like such as myself, because I feel like sometimes you got to work from the inside out. So that's what me personally, I try to do. Yeah, I'm a PO, but at the same time, I'm human. I'm a humanistic first before anything. You know, I got ties with Brother Shabazz because he was incarcerated where I was a counselor at, and that's how we was able to build a rapport. I do a lot of work. With the probationers themselves, trying to bring awareness and trying to bridge that gap and making the people who is not who doesn't have that knowledge about mental health or diversity about different type of cultures, I try to bridge that gap and make them more aware, so that way it could be an easier ride for the brothers that is behind the wall trying to come home and turn that leaf.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. What's your name again, sister?
Gina.
Miss Gina, thank you, sister.
Name
I
is
appreciate it.
Yes, my Muslim name is Atika. No, my Muslim name is Atika.
Okay. Okay, assalamu alaikum, sis.
That's right. Wa alaikum
assalam wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum assalam. And you know, now I'm going to let Brother Hassan, you want to speak real quick, and then I want to get to Brother Sean real quick.
Yeah, well, I think that's a perfect segue, honestly. And you know, I don't want to take any more time from the brother, because I believe everybody's touching on what needs to be said. I think that one aspect of it that we are talking about specifically today is the mental health and mass incarceration, right? And I bear witness to how many brothers and sisters, right, men and women of all nations and nationalities have been affected by the lack of a mental health care system when it comes to incarceration. Because on the inside, when guys come in, they come in with what they call either a MH0 to an MH5, right? And you're classified as such when you first come into the system. So anybody who doesn't have a mental health history is classified as an MH0. All right. Mm-hmm. Then guys have mental health 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Threes, fours, and fives have to go to Marion to be clinically admitted. Ones and
That's
twos
right.
can stay in regular population. But the problem that I have is that there are no mental health evaluations that are done during the term of incarceration. So how do we know if guys are not developing mental health issues while they are incarcerated, they're not being diagnosed, and then they're being released to the street with these mental health issues.
That's right.
Right?
Right.
And so this is one of the reasons why we do need those that look like us in this field, because we've been most disproportionately affected through mass incarceration. Now, mm-hmm. let us look at something, because I want to point, this is something to bring Sean in on, because his brother has a mental health history spanning over 21 years where he's
wow.
been evaluated multiple times by, and this one particular psychological professional who evaluated him four times, three times found mm-hmm. him clinically incompetent to stand trial, and then unrestorable. And for the fourth, and I'm going to let him speak a little bit about that. Come on, Sean, just tell him a little bit about your brother, man. What happened?
Peace. I have a brother, Anthony Stewart, who's incarcerated at Greensville Correctional Center, which is in Jarrett, Virginia. So to do this, my brother, these evaluations span over a 21-year period. So as I mm-hmm. said before, my brother's name is Anthony Stewart. He was found 12 times incompetent. Two of those 12, he was found incompetent, unrestorable, and for the foreseeable future. Now, six of those 18 evaluations, he was found competent, but then later some of these same psychiatrists came back, or evaluators, and went against the evaluation and said he was incompetent. He was found in 2016 unrestorably incompetent by Judge Anita Filson, who worked in the Rockbridge Circuit Court. Let me get that correct, because she's now retired. And then he was found again incompetent and unrestorable for the foreseeable future, September 18th of 2020, by Circuit Court Judge Muford Trumbo, who now is retired.
Okay.
Now this last
right.
Now this last judge he went in front of, Christopher Russell, was sitting on the bench. My brother had an all-white jury trial back in February 24th and February 25th of this calendar, this past calendar year. And then he also, so on February 25th, he was found guilty by the all-white jury. And then on August 9th, he went to sentencing, and my brother's attorney at that time, Mr. Melvin Hill, who's out of Roanoke, Virginia, a black attorney at that, subpoenaed Scott Bender. Scott Bender works for the ILPPP, and the ILPPP is the Institute of Law, Public Policy, and Psychiatry. It's a branch that works from UVA. So all of these psychologists, okay. this last psychologist that did these evaluations on my brother worked for the University of Virginia. Mm. Now, Scott Bender,
yes,
now, mind you, Scott Bender, like the brother said, had evaluated my brother four times. The first three evaluations, he found him incompetent. And then mysteriously on the last one, he found him competent. Only after 60 days now. 60 days. Now, I said this is over a 21-year period. My brother had a traumatic brain injury. And I'm going to read to you the five, the irreversible things that can't be overlooked in my brother's situation. My brother has a very low IQ. This is well documented because I have the school records to prove it. My brother, because of his brain injury, basically went to a program at school, which at the time was called the IEP. I don't know what that stands for right now, but the IEP. Individualized education, the brother's telling me. He was basically passed through school just because of attendance. All right. The second is learning disability.
Okay.
Then my brother has cognitive defects, drug addiction, and then on top of that, traumatic brain injury, and he's also end-stage renal disease, which further deteriorates cognitive, the part of the
ability.
Way, the cognitive. Right, ability.
Right.
So now my brother goes, now there was another doctor prior to Scott Bender who evaluated my brother. His name was Kenneth Showalter. He works for Western State. Three times he was evaluated by Kenneth Showalter, and all three evaluations he never deviated from his analysis of my brother. All three came back incompetent to stand trial. When Dr. Bender takes
well,
the case, he evaluated. Go ahead. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Brother Sean, what I want to do is out of respect for you and most importantly mm-hmm. your brother, I want to have a follow-up on this because we don't really have the time to go into the whole discussion right here. But I want to have another platform and a follow-up and to where we – all right, baby, to where we can go ahead and touch on this topic and maybe see how we can attain some support and advocacy for your brother and other brothers like him on another podcast coming up maybe next weekend. Right now we do have one more caller. I want to get the caller in so that they can, because we got maybe 15 more minutes left. So Jason, can you bring the other caller in?
5885, you live.
Hello.
Peace. Good evening. Peace. Good evening.
Good evening, Latoya. How are you?
Hey, Sister Latoya. Peace. How are you doing, Sister? Pleasure to speak to you.
Good to hear. Happy New Year to all. I just want to give a compliment. I hear a great voice on this line. And I want y'all to continue getting out there and making your voices heard, because we all have loved ones that suffer mental health, or we all just know someone. So just continue doing God's work and ask him to lead. Y'all going to continue following him.
Mm. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
You're always inspiring, and it humbles me every time you get on the podcast. Thank you so much for your support. And continue to connect us and plug us in with other people out here, because we need as many people as possible to pay attention to this platform, because it's very much needed. You know, podcasts today, to me, in the black community, are disappreciated, because a lot of the podcasts to me today are focused on things that are relevant to the reconstruction and redevelopment of our people. You know what I'm saying? It's more that propaganda BS, focusing on all the negatives instead of focusing on the things that we need to be doing to heal ourselves. We got a few minutes here, and we have such a large panel tonight. I'm just going to now begin to let the people who join us, our panelists today, our guests today, each give a final word, which they would like to leave the audience with. Brother Sean, we'll start with you, being you were the last, and I had to sadly cut you off. But Brother Sean, is there any last few words you would like to give to the audience tonight?
Yes, sir. Most of all, any person that's on the podcast tonight, and anybody that may be listening in, you can contact me. The best way is to inbox me, because I'm looking for people to help me advocate for my brother. So my number is, I can give you my number as well, 757-667-0742. My email is Sean Stewart, all lowercase letters, SHAUNSTEWART, 1939@gmail.com. The reason I'm telling these people, to reach out to me, I have all of the paperwork, so it's always easier to put the puzzle together when somebody has the pieces to the puzzle. I have every piece to the puzzle. I have all school records, all medical records. I have all documentation, legal, evaluations dealing with my brother's situation. So if anybody reach out to me and they're willing to advocate, now don't waste my time, because I don't want to waste yours as well. Please contact me. I will send you the paperwork. I have the newspaper article. And there's also a podcast that you can watch that will bring you in tune with what's going on with my brother's case. It's called Living Life After Life on YouTube. It was interviewed by Banky Pell and also Troy Ketchmore, who both have been incarcerated in the Virginia DOC. Mm-hmm. So please go to YouTube, look at the interview, and then from that interview, it will give you a clear understanding of what I'm dealing with and what I'm fighting for.
Well, may Allah continue to make it easy for you, brother. May Allah guide you and your brother and upon the straight path. Thank you, brother. And thank you for coming on the show tonight. I look forward to having you again. We're going to bring you back on next week, okay? Inshallah.
Yes, sir.
Sister Amala, you want to have any final words to say to the people before we leave tonight?
Well, once again, thank you all for having me. I think we just need to continue to have these discussions and deal with equality. Again, minding our business means each and every brother and sister, because when they go through any type of mental health issue and it goes undocumented, unrecognized, untreated, or not dealt with, it affects us all in the long run. I will say that for you all listening, that you could visit my website. That's You Talk, You Heal. That's the letter U, talk, the letter uheal.com. And that platform is really for for any and everybody. If you want to come and talk, I will get back up doing my conversations on Clubhouse, and just kind of bear with me as I move forward. But I'm here if you all need me. If you know someone who is difficult to reach or to talk to, you can definitely reach out to me. My information is on the site. And I look forward to happy healing in all of us. And may we continue to rise in truth and in power and in knowledge as we really heal ourselves and heal one another. Peace, light, and love to everybody on the call.
Peace, peace. Don't go nowhere, sister. Don't go nowhere, Sean, because I gotta ask y'all a question before we go to close.
All right.
Brother Wahid,
I'm here, brother.
You want to give any final words to the audience, Brother Wahid?
Let me first say, I believe it was Sister Amala who lit it up. She had the podcast on fire. She had me over here shaking my head and smiling, man. She was on fire. You on fire, sister. How to eat to live, all of that good stuff. You were dropping megaton bombs. So I appreciate you, sister. And to the brother Miles, I can hear his frustration when he called in. Mm-hmm. I can hear him being frustrated. And what it sounded like to me is that he wants us to hold our own selves accountable, and he's 100% correct. It's 100% correct. We do have to look at what we're doing to contribute to our condition. Mm-hmm. And that's what that's what this is about, is holding each other accountable. I also want to say is Taraji P. Henson. Most of us know who she is. I believe it was her son's father that got killed or murdered or something, and her son saw it. So she had her son in therapy. Mm-hmm. He was not making any progress until he got with a black therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been on a campaign for several years for emphasizing the importance of black therapists, right? And we definitely need black male therapists as well. what I wanted to say about that, too, is just us continue to unite, put things in action more than just talk. The talking is great. This is where it begins. But we got to follow through with more organization and unity. I feel honored and privileged to be a part of this. And one thing I do want to make clear is with substance abuse, like when the brother was talking about prenatal care, predisposed to addiction and things like that, that's what we call comorbidity or co-occurring disorder. Or dual diagnosis is when you're dealing with substance and mental health.
I got 5 minutes, brother. I got five minutes.
The biopsychosocial and spiritual model is extremely important, and maybe later we can really delve into what that means. So with that, I'm just going to say peace and assalamu alaikum and love and light to all the people that called in and all the people on the panel.
Mm-hmm.
And closing, I would like to just thank everyone. But before we, I guess, all go, I would like for me and my co-host, Ms. Krista Ellison, Ms. Tamara Pilgrim, and Mr. Brother Hassan Shabazz, we would like to begin having this platform once a month at the very first week of every month, every first Sunday of the month. We would like to start having this conversation of mental health, and I would like for this panel to be those who would be operative in making this happen. Would everybody agree to that?
Yes, sir.
Sister Amala?
That's great.
Yes.
Brother Wahid?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Sean?
Yes, sir.
So we'll be visiting the very first Sunday of every month. We'll start opening this platform, and our discussion will be directly on how we can help heal the black community through mental health. And you'll be able to reach these specialists, everyone listening to our audience, on every first Sunday of every month, okay, on Point of Impact. So we will be here, and we are taking action. Action is what I'm about. My name is Minhaj, and that means the path, the open way, the creed. Listen, I ain't playing. You understand? And I want to say this. In closing, I got like 2 minutes, and I sometimes may go over, but I have to say this, and I want to thank my co-host for supporting me today and holding us down in this platform. Let me tell you something, people. Let me tell you something. Change comes about through change. Change only happens when change is present. So we have to start acting. We have to start taking knowledge and proceeding. Al-Elm Kola wa Amu. Knowledge precedes speech and action. We are here to attain that knowledge. Let's start getting down. And the one thing that was spoken tonight that I really want everybody to take hold of, there was two things. One is, you are my business. You are my business. So I want you to start right now to go out in your community and be a part of helping recultivate, re-educate, and redevelop your community. Stop sitting back, running your mouth, gossiping. Hold yourself accountable. Hold yourself accountable. Because, you know, the best man is the man that, when he sees a man in wrong and in error, he doesn't sit back and uplift himself. He gets out there and he strives to uplift that man. You understand? Or that woman. And so we have to start operating as a community that are about being steadfast in developing our community, because this is what it's about, humanity, the upliftment of humanity. And I just want to thank you all. I cannot say it in enough. Thank you all for this powerful, moving, heart-wrenching and touching night for me. It was this is the first podcast of 2023 for Point of Impact, and I want to say that it was very, very necessary and beautiful, and we love you all, and thank you all who called in, and if we didn't get to, please join us again next week. I'm sorry we don't have more time. What I will do is tell you that in the upcoming months, we will be trying to make this broadcast 2 hours. Okay, so we're going to be working hard to try to do more to make the time more accessible for people. But until then, I want everybody, please stop what you're doing, man. Stop what you're doing and take this time to do something that will benefit you. Maslah, that will benefit you in this life and in the hereafter, and that will benefit your family. Your family. And that will benefit your community, your locality. And everybody, please be at peace. Y'all want to say goodnight? Everybody want to say goodnight? Assalamu alaikum.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. And wa alaikum assalam.
Jay Sean, it's all you, brother.
Shout out, Young Swiss.
Again, I know the time is now, I gotta do official. I'm down on one knee, I hope you need a tissue. Do you take me for eternity? And make your pinky promise that you'll never leave. Even when you're mad at me, just don't up and leave. The future is scary, I don't wanna see. My life without you will be a tragedy. When I wake up in the morning, you I wanna see. I'm sorry, babe, there's so much that I wanna say. First, let me ask you, will you marry me?
Oh my God, I'm
seriously about to cry right now. Are you serious?
Baby, you know that I love you. I want you to know that I love you.
I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do.